Hello and welcome to another edition of Living with Dying, the podcast where we talk about death and dying and try to help people be a bit more prepared than we generally are. And today I've come across a lovely person called Maria Bailey of griefspecialists.org who does exactly that. So lovely to meet you, Maria. I know you're the co-founder of Grief Specialists. Would you like to tell me about how you got into it in the first place?
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast, Ellis. It's really lovely to meet you. And yes, I'll give you a bit of background about how this came to be. So I found myself running the PR and marketing for a grief organisation that did grief training. And I trained as a grief specialist during my time there just to understand the process of what I was trying to promote. And then in 2020, the day before we went into national lockdown, my father died and he'd had cancer, but he lived in America. So we had to say goodbye over the phone. And all of a sudden, the work I'd been doing became really important to me. And I suddenly understood the gravity of what people go through when they lose somebody they're close to, no matter what the relationship with that person. And then we had lockdown, as you know, something that I think a lot of us would rather forget, but it was an almost collective loss across the country, a loss of freedom, loss of normal, loss of loved ones, loss of going to school for my children. And then I found myself doing more and more writing and helping people online because they couldn't actually go out and see a counsellor. They couldn't get any face-to-face support. So I used to help people on Zoom with their losses. So it was a very busy time. And then in July of that year, my mother got a terminal lung cancer diagnosis. It was very hard, but we were very lucky that by that time she lived with us. She was in a granny annex at the back of our house. So although we had to have 2 weeks of being apart from her when we first went into lockdown, because she had been diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, so she was clinically vulnerable to COVID. But for the rest of it, she was there. And she was very naughty. She used to sneak out at night and go to Sainsbury's when nobody was looking. And I'd catch her coming back with her shopping bags. But by the end of 2020, sadly, just before Christmas, she died. Her cancer took a hold very quickly and she was in and out of a hospice 3 times. And I was in a very fortunate position that I had all these grief specialists around me, really cushioned the blow. I had people who got it. Then we had Christmas and we all went into lockdown again. And I had what I'd call a couple of months of just self-care where I could shut the doors and deal with what had just gone on with my family. And then fast forward to the end of 2021 and the organisation I was working for closed. So I had all this knowledge, all these people who had trained with me around the country with no UK home anymore. So Matt, who's my co-founder, was actually the digital marketing specialist at this organisation. And him and I had this conversation about what we could do with this. And the consequence of that was setting up grief specialists. We felt very passionately that nobody should have to wait for help. And when they ask for help, at whatever point in their grief journey they are, we want to be there for them. So whether it's on diagnosis and somebody's going through a living grief, like I went through, knowing that somebody had an expiry date, or whether it's pet loss or redundancy, divorce, or whatever loss they find themselves going through, and more often than not, it's a bereavement. But we're there, and we have set this up so that we've got specialists around the country from different disciplines. So it's not just a grief action program like I trained in, and I deliver a program called EduTherapy Grief Resolution, which is a bit of a mouthful, but that's what it is. or whether it's counselling, bereavement counselling, or grief tending, which was a new one on me when I first came across it, grief yoga, whatever somebody needs, there's hopefully something there for them, because I'm a big believer in one size doesn't fit all, because everybody's grief's unique. So 3 years later, here we are. We have a very big online platform with lots and lots of free resources, articles that are searchable, that cover a multitude of losses, that offer that top line grief support that somebody might need. And sometimes that's all anybody needs, is a bit of an acknowledgement and some tips on what to do with their grief. Or they can find somebody to work with. We recognise that all grief's unique. So unique grief needs sometimes something unique to deal with it. Somebody to deal with it physically. Some people benefit from somebody listening. So that's what we've set up, and our website has lots and lots of free articles and resources. And sometimes somebody just needs that level of acknowledgement that that's what they're going through, and there's lots of tips and advice on there. Or they want to connect with somebody to have one-to-one or group support, and they all have an initial phone call service, so you can speak to them and see if you gel, because I think that's really important when you're being vulnerable and letting somebody into your innermost feelings. You want to be able to trust them and have a level of like for them. So that's something they all offer. And if somebody's perhaps going through a bit more of a financial hard time, we have a small pot of funding where we can at least offer an initial session with a grief specialist. And the dream is to be able to say, you know, we'll pay for all of it. That takes time to build, and getting funding is getting more and more difficult. So that's where we're at the moment. We're trying to go out and find pots of funding, or companies or funeral directors who want to support us.
Sounds like a fantastic resource, and well done for setting it up. I can't go on though without asking you, first of all, what is grief tending?
Oh, grief tending is back to Africa. Yeah, going back to human basics. You know, sometimes you need something physical to do, and grief tending offers that. It's steeped in tradition and honour and ritual. And, you know, a lot of people we come across, sometimes they're in fresh, raw grief, but they know they want to speak to somebody. And not everybody offers that service, or GPs, for instance, might be a first port of call, and they might refer to, say, something like talking therapies or a charity. And if it's talking therapies, not all talking therapists are trained in grief, because it is quite a unique skill set, no matter what kind of grief support you deliver. The fundamentals are often based on the same thing, whether that's, you know, from a point of listening to a point of giving somebody an action to do. It's all different to normal talking therapies. So that's hopefully where we're there, and we're starting to look at how to work with GP practices. And I certainly do that in my local area, to the point they're now referring to the free grief support groups I run locally.
That's a key thing, isn't it? If you approach the GP, you probably won't get help quickly.
No. And we hear so often that people have been medicated for grief, and actually grief doesn't need to be fixed. It needs to be heard. So quite often people have been put on antidepressants or sleeping tablets, because sleeplessness can be a real symptom of grief. And actually all it does is stuff down and prolong what somebody's really needs help with.
I've been looking at your website, and you've got, as you said earlier on, a lot of resources on there. And the one thing that impressed me most of all is the section which you call How to Listen to Someone Who's Been Bereaved. And as it says here, one of the hardest and yet most important things to do is to resist the urge to fix things, because kind of that's almost second nature in humans, isn't it? We want to go in and help. We want to make a difference. We want to find something we can do that makes us feel better and fix the person we're talking to. But that's not what a grieving person needs, is it, or wants?
No, that's right. And it often starts around, you know, the death of somebody, when somebody will put in a card, "I'm here if you need me. If there's anything you'd like, just ask." But actually, when someone's grieving, they haven't got the thought process to ask, or they don't like to trouble people, they don't like to bring people down, so they don't. But actually, outside of listening, what somebody might need is for you to bring over a hot meal in the first instance. And then before you get to listening, it's remembering. So remembering that person might need your support. And then the listening part is actually just being in the present moment, giving that person your full attention and shutting up without interruption or judgment, and just listening. And resisting the urge to hand over a tissue. If somebody cries, we're not very comfortable as British people with crying, but just let the tears flow. It's a very normal grief reaction. But handing somebody a tissue sends the signal that you're not comfortable with their tears and you want them to mop them up. And another one is giving somebody a hug, but don't pat them. They don't need winding. Just hug until they release, if they want to hug. That is, not everybody does. But we have an urge to wind people in this country. You know, give them a pat on the back. Oh, they're there, dear.
Yeah, isn't it? Yes.
But that signal is like, stop crying now, you know, like you do with a baby. So it's being comfortable with listening. And it's a real, you know, it takes a level of concentration that's outside of your normal daily conversation. It is just sitting and being and just, yeah, letting them speak.
And I noticed one of the things you point out in this is that you, as you said earlier, you have to be present, but you don't want to be thinking about the next thing you're going to say, because that's distracting you from what the grieving person is saying.
Yes, anticipating the next thing or thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. Don't distract yourself.
Yeah.
Just let it come. And when there's a natural silence and a pause, then perhaps ask a question. But otherwise, just be. And you don't need to try and fix it or say, oh, we can do this. You know, just let them speak. And, you know, acknowledge it by saying something like, I'm sorry you're feeling so sad. That must be, I can only imagine how hard that is. And saying the words only imagine is a removal to relating it from yourself, because quite often we'll say things, I understand, I know, I've been through this, and comparing. Actually, you don't know what that person's really feeling or thinking, because you haven't been through exactly what they have been through. But you can be empathetic and acknowledge their thoughts and feelings without it being about you. There were times when I wanted to bash people over the head who were talking to me about my mother, and, you know, the urge to not be violent or angry was, you know, it was tough, because you just want somebody to say, you know, that's really sad, Maria, actually. You must really be missing her. Or Christmas, how did you get through Christmas? And I think because I had that lockdown straight after my mum died, by the time we came out of it, people had forgotten that I was grieving. They were so caught up in being in lockdown that it was almost like she was insignificant and forgotten about, and my grief. And I just had to dust myself off and get on with it. And looking back now, I had that Christmas. I had her funeral on Christmas Eve at 9 a.m, just to squeeze her in before Christmas. Came back, made a bed, started cooking, and my in-laws arrived at lunchtime, and they were staying with us because they'd had to watch her funeral on the screen, because we could only have 20 people there. And so, having then driven a couple of hours to me, they were ready for lunch when they got to my house, and then Christmas began. So it was a very bizarre experience. And I would say that lockdown gave me the opportunity to just cry and be and speak to people who understood, which was really lovely to have, you know, those people around me virtually at the time, who I worked with, who got it. But yes, it was very strange. But I think in terms of other people, you know, if somebody's going through something at Christmas time, for instance, it's very hard. That first Christmas, the empty chair, I mean, it was in my face the day after the funeral, you know, the empty chair scenario. But just having somebody acknowledge that, or thinking, oh, they're going to be on their own for Christmas, you know, let's invite them for Christmas. If they, you know, give them that option. They might not want to, but just giving somebody the option so that they're not on their own, or schedule a phone call with them so that they know you're thinking about them. And talking about their person, because they're thinking about their person anyway, bringing up somebody who has died doesn't make it any worse for them.
I think people believe it does. I feel I would like society in general to keep using that person's name.
Yes.
And to ask from time to time, you know, what you've thought about them recently, what little memories you've had, what anecdotes you'd like to tell, so that it doesn't always come from me.
Yes, shared memories, and, you know, or I found this photograph of your late husband. Would you like it? Or, you know, I just thought I'd share it with you because we're thinking about him. We miss him too, you know, things like that. And I remember the second Christmas, one of my friends bought me a bauble for my Christmas tree with Mum on it, with feathers inside. And so every Christmas she's on the tree, and it's beautiful. It doesn't cause me pain. I just love putting it on the tree because then she's part of Christmas. And I would encourage gifts like that to help other people memorialise their person or pet. But it's, we need to get better as a nation at acknowledging and sharing. In fact, I've just written, just going off piece here, I've just written a piece about Liverpool Football Club. So I'm a lifelong Liverpool fan, and a lot of fans have been saying the team are being dragged down by remembering Diogo Jota on the 20th minute of every match with his song. I wrote in my piece, please don't stop singing it. It's probably a comfort to those players that you're remembering him. Let's not sweep him under the carpet. It's not going to impact performance. They're already not concentrating because when somebody's grieving, quite often one of the symptoms is an inability to concentrate for long stretches. So, and we've seen that very much with the team this season.
So you're convinced they are all still grieving, and that's partly why they're not playing well. Yeah, so yeah. I've heard that mentioned before, but it's interesting to hear it from someone like you who knows what they're talking about. And it's inevitable, isn't it? Because every day they're going back to do what they used to do with him.
That's right. And when you train with somebody day in, day out, and then play matches together, then win a title together, it's huge for that person to suddenly not be there, and a huge sudden loss. And then, you know, a lot of blame and a lot of losses that have gone around, and, you know, the manager needs to go because it's his fault they're not playing well. Then there's these new players that have been brought into the team who are not part of that collective grief. And they're not connecting with the other players because they've not got that in common. So it's a really interesting dynamic. And I would love the club to think about doing some kind of group therapy so that they can all share and acknowledge how they're feeling together rather than trying to grieve alone. So I'd love to see the club do that.
But going back to what we were talking about earlier on about how to help friends and neighbours who've been bereaved, one thing I noticed on, I watch a lot of drama on television, and you were talking about the patting that goes on in a hug. And that I've seen a lot of that recently, but I've also seen an awful lot of people saying, it's okay, it's okay, it's going to be okay, in situations where it is clearly not okay because somebody's just died or somebody's just lost something or somebody's been declared ill or whatever. Why do we do that? It's such a bizarre reaction, isn't it?
It's a reassurance that this is temporary and you are going to feel better, but it's not very, it's intellectually correct, emotionally unhelpful.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
It's an interesting response, isn't it? And again, it's not letting somebody share their emotional truth. You're shutting it down because you don't want them to cry in front of you. You don't want that discomfort. So it's I know, I'll just go to what I think is going to work and stop this and say it's okay. It's all going to get better. You know, you will feel happy again. Or my pet hate, time's a great healer. Because all time does is pass. Time doesn't heal in itself. The pain might feel slightly dulled and you learn to live with grief, but actually time does not heal at all.
So those are your pet hates. What are your pet suggestions for people? I mean, you've actually given me quite a lot already, haven't you? But what do you say when you've heard somebody close to you has lost somebody close to them?
I say to them, I'm thinking of you. I can only imagine how sad you must be feeling. Are there any dietary requirements in your household? And I will bring you over dinner tomorrow. What's your favourite dinner? What was your person's favourite dinner? Can I make that for you? Because it's the practical things. Or are you okay with the paperwork? Would you like somebody to sit with you while you go through your paperwork? Because that is a horrible task, especially for somebody like me who is a paperwork avoider. But somebody to sit with you while you go through probate or phone up banks and have to tell your story over and over on the phone again, you know, that's helpful. Another helpful thing in that aspect is knowing that there's services like the Tell Us Once service that will, because not everybody knows that exists, and you don't generally hear about the Tell Us Once service until you go to the registrars to register a death, and sometimes they forget to tell you. So having that little, those little nuggets of knowledge that will help that person with their paperwork mountain, you know, eases it. But from an emotional perspective, it's that listening. You know, would you like to talk about what happened? Because sometimes in raw grief, you want to spill it all out, exactly blow by blow, how that person died. Sometimes you're not ready to have that conversation. And I'll say, no, I don't want to talk about it. Say, okay, well, when you're ready, you know, just say, and I'll sit and have a cup of tea with you and let's talk about it. But, until, you know, just saying, I'm thinking of you and then nothing else, or I'm sorry for your loss and nothing else. Yes, they're a good start, you're acknowledging, but people need more than that if they're a close friend or a neighbour, you know. And some, what I did find for me, and I hear it quite often, is that the people you expect to show up don't, and the unexpected people come forward. And they often end up being your closest friends afterwards.
It's strange, that, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, I've heard that before. But how we get the message out, Maria, to the whole country and the whole world, really, about doing all this stuff right, I don't know. I mean, you're working hard at it. I'm working hard at it. Various people I've interviewed on the podcast are working hard at it. But you still come across people saying something completely crass, don't you?
Ingrained. It's ingrained in us. You know, we've heard it from our parents, who heard it from their parents, who heard it from their Victorian parents, who were stiff upper lip, and you know, all these messages, these subliminal messages that we carry, like, be, you know, be strong. You're strong. You can get through this. Strong for who? Why do we need to be strong? And what is strength, actually? I think strength is crying and letting it out. That takes strength and courage.
It takes strength to be vulnerable, doesn't it?
But the stiff lip rhetoric and men in particular on that front, who feel they have to be strong for their family and feel that they can't show an ounce of emotion for fear of, you know, looking weak, is ridiculous. And actually what we've caused is a nation of ill mental health and ill health as a consequence of stuffing down how we're feeling. You know, look how many people have got mental ill health. And, you know, look how many people have got things like fibromyalgia or, you know, things that are inside our bodies. And you think, where's that all come from? And I think sometimes it's from not releasing how we're really feeling and being our true selves.
Holding on to some stuff which we're not dealing with.
Yes. So one of the exercises I do with my grief groups is to draw on their body, draw an outline of their body and put little crosses where they feel their grief in their body. So sometimes it's knees, sometimes it's heart, head and stomach is a really popular one. The gut being described as the second brain. So I mean, I'm not a specialist in this area, but I mean, there's a lady called Mary Frances O'Connor who's written about the grieving brain and the grieving body. Those are her two books. And, you know, it's eye-opening.
Thank you, Maria. We're coming to the end now. Thank you so much for talking to me. And if anybody wants to take advantage of your resource, it's griefspecialist.org.
That's right. Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Dillis. It's been
Thank
lovely.
Thank you so much for doing it, Maria.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.